You're listening to Yale Radio WYBC. This is Brainerd Carey with the lives of the artists, architects, curators, and more.
Today on our show, I'm talking with Emma Sapphire. Emma, thanks so much for being with me today.
Thanks so much for having me.
Emma, we're going to talk about your show at Rain Rain. It's a group show, actually, and the title of it is really intriguing. The Lafayette Rendezvous, Scene 2, What Do Angels Look Like? It's a great name for a show because it's one of the longest I've heard in a while, too.
Right? Yeah.
So we're going to talk about your work, but that, you know, the show is really interesting, too. So as a way of, I guess, talking about your work, the idea of this show or the curatorial framework about what do angels look like, which is somewhat literal, right, that can be then taken in many ways, biblical creatures. What was your take on that in terms of how it related to your work? And I mean, maybe that's a stretch, and you can say if it is, often curators like have these titles and then they find work that fits it. But even the way the curator was talking about your work, yeah, made me curious what you think about that, its relationship to the title, what do angels look like?
Yeah, I mean, I've personally become recently, I guess not that recently, the past few years, more interested in the sort of Catholic mythology at large, specifically interested in sort of moments of, like, miraculous moments, like I don't know if you know the Veronica legend.
I don't. What is the Veronica legend?
Jesus is on his way to be crucified, and this woman stops him and offers him her veil to wipe his sweat, and he does. And then his face is miraculously imprinted on the piece of fabric, the veil, and which is called like an archiopetta, which is like an image not made of human hand, which is considered the truest image. And I'm really interested in this idea of the true image, of the, you know, appearing image, the veil, and then also this sort of like erotic exchange that can really only happen via textile. So I think a lot about the sort of like miraculous transition of objects and form between different materials and sort of different times and place. So I don't know if I think about like angels specifically, but I am thinking about the sort of like the making of something becoming sort of its own mythos or born out of something sort of alchemical. So it like makes sense to me in a way.
That's so interesting. I didn't know Veronica, the story of Veronica, but that that's what it was. Veronica, you said?
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's a fascinating story that I heard parts of, but didn't know that whole story. But also that reminds me of this idea of the image not made by human hand is so interesting. Is that also kind of like how the Shroud of Turin was made? Would that be the same kind of thing as an image not made by a human hand?
I mean, it's funny. I have like an armchair theory about this because the Veronica legend predates the Shroud of Turin by a couple hundred years. And I think that it sort of like didn't catch on because there wasn't a physical relic. And the Shroud of Turin sort of like served a different place in the public memory because it is a physical relic and like you can't really go visit it because it's like locked up, but like theoretically sometimes they do show it. But that was more like they found this piece of fabric that has Christ's body imprinted on it, and people still don't know scientifically how it was made. And it's interesting because the Shroud of Turin specifically has a lot to do with the sort of like history of photography. I'm forgetting the name of this essay, but it's in this book by Peter Grimer about the sort of like birth of photography and the trying to record images of the Shroud of Turin. And then by seeing a negative of it was when they could really see the face. And then they were like, oh my God, like this is, it's true. So it was sort of like the first thing that could sort of like quote unquote miraculous image that like could be made like objectively scientific through photography.
That's really interesting. And so the work in this show, the title of it is Giron. How do you say that word? I looked up that word.
Girondelet, I believe.
Girondelet.
I don't really know.
So so Girondelet, I mean, even in the context we're talking seems related, but of course not literally in some ways. You know, it could be like something almost ephemeral. But tell me a little bit about the materials in this. And Girondelet, yeah, which is a chandelier, right? A chandelier armature
or
something?
A candelabra that's attached to a mirror. In like a very specific early definition of it. But the materials of these works sort of go through a long process to become what they are. Some of the things that are cast, so basically the thing itself is pewter that has been torch welded together, and the inside has needle lace that's done with reflective thread, like plastic reflective thread that's used in like a commercial setting to like make logos and stuff. But the things that I am casting out of the pewter that I'm welding together are smocked fabric. So smocking, specifically North American smocking, is a kind of embroidery technique that I use, where one piece of fabric is manipulated to seam as if it's multiple pieces of fabric fitted together.
So I have to stop you there a little bit because I don't totally follow that technique. So smocking, that sounds fascinating, but. Yeah, can you explain it a little more so I understand it? Because it sounds like an illusion is made there, correct?
It is, in a way. So it's a smocking originally was invented to create stretch in garments before there was elastic. So I was interested initially in this idea of like fabric being bunched together to essentially create more space. But through a series of grids and knots, you're able to create a pattern in the fabric that makes it look like it's different pieces put together. But in reality, it's just one piece of fabric that's been manipulated into these shapes. And I became really interested in it while I was in graduate school. And then I started to sort of take it in a lot of directions. I use it a lot in my paintings. And while in grad school, I was able to do one cast of a hardened piece of fabric in aluminum. And I had been searching for ways to do that sort of on my own, but it's like expensive and hard to find places that will do aluminum if you want to be experimental. And so my friend Colleen Billing showed me how to cast in pewter, which I do in my kitchen. So I'm making casts of smocked fabric. And then I was making these two pieces that are at Rain while I was at a residency called Headland Center for the Arts in Northern California. And while I was there, I became really interested in the radiators, which can't be removed because they're historical landmarks, but they don't function. And the space is a former army barracks, so it's a weird like relic of the militaristic American, you know, lore and history. That is sort of like decoration protected, but they're incredibly ornate. There's a cherub, there's a little dragon. So some of those things are cast. I use the sort of silicone to cast them that they use for like the Is It Cake stuff, where it's like a putty that you press onto something. And then I wasn't getting enough of a relief in those that I wanted because these things have been painted over and over again. So I made rubbings from the radiator and then made tracings from that and then made them into hot glue and then cast the hot glue. So those larger sort of Baroque shapes are made of hot glue but are the size and referential to the radiator. And then I basically torch welded them all together with like a creme brulee hobby kitchen torch, and then did the needle lace inside.
It's such an interesting process. I'm so glad I asked you about that and that you explained that in detail because, you know, it's an unusual way to work, and it also makes me curious about, like, how you came upon that. I mean, I know you went to graduate school at Yale, right?
Mm-hmm.
And it almost sounds like, and I'm just talking about like the medium in general now, almost sounds like Matthew Barney-esque in this sense of like, what? These kind of materials, the creme brulee making all of those things, right? are very unusual, are atypical of what artists have in their studios. how did you get to those materials, if I can ask that question? Were you in pursuit of kind of new materials, or because that's such a fascinating place to arrive in, is really what I am thinking.
It's really just sort of a natural inquisitive process. I would say like my practice is really driven by material research and sort of becoming interested in like a new technique that I want to utilize in relationship to my work. And then sort of thinking about it historically and culturally, and then looking at whatever else to sort of make sense of it as I go. But I've always been sewing since I was very small, but also trying to make things hard and soft. And I think a lot of my work has to do with sort of thinking about like quote unquote domestic spaces or tools in a quote unquote fine art setting. And I think that's why I really like the pewter, is that it's like I've taken metal, I'm able to do my metalworking like in private in my domestic space. And sort of like all of my materials are accessible to me, and that's why I'm interested in them. I'm interested in the literal malleability of metal, because like if I don't like it, I just melt it again. And like with my fabric, like I, you know, take it on the subway back and forth in my bag to work on it at home or at studio, because if it wrinkles, I just steam it and it's not wrinkled anymore. So the materials I use, generally the thing that sort of binds them is that they offer me a kind of flexibility and a sort of low stakes approach to working with them. And even like in the digital collages that I make in Photoshop for my photographs, it's sort of like everything can always be brought back to its like original state. But as far as I find my way through stuff, it's really just like experimenting and then asking people and then experimenting and just like really letting my like intuition of what I'm interested in using my hands to do sort of lead the direction of where the work goes.
And the piece that we're talking about, that's Rain, that has also a kind of feeling of almost a mirror or a web, and not to get too narrative about this, but even more than others that we could be talking about, the different sculptural works that you're making and the materials that you're using that are quite different than this one that we're talking about, or these few. The image itself feels like a mirror to me, or something mm-hmm. like that. It feels almost reflective. Is that intentional? Because that creates a very odd kind of feeling, in that, you know, there isn't a reflection there, of course, mm-hmm. but it feels like mm-hmm. there should be, and it's something that pulls you in as well.
Yeah, I'm always trying to like draw people into my work and then sort of keep them out once they get close to looking at it. And mm-hmm. so I'm always trying to, in my digital collages, I'm always trying to create things that look transparent or seem like they have a shadow on them. Or, I mean, they're often pictures of reflections and or fabric behind something with a reflection on top, superimposed with other things. And so thinking about these sort of like mirror, sort of Baroque mirror shapes in relationship to like having no image inside is really like exciting to me, because it sort of creates another like void portal for people to get lost in it and also like not be able to access. And I think that kind of like opacity and transparency is something that I'm always trying to sort of like navigate in how I can sort of like, I don't know, like encourage people to look at it a specific way or something. You know, I want people to look close but also look far.
I like that. And your interest continues in this kind of the idea of the image not made by human hand, which will really remain with me, I know, after this interview. It's one of the things I'll keep thinking about, as well as your work, of course, in this show. But is that a thread that still runs through your work currently?
The image not made of human hands?
Yeah, that interest or that research, that thinking.
Absolutely. Yeah. I'd say that's sort of like the overarching thing that I'm interested in. I did undergrad at RISD and majored in printmaking. And so I've always been interested in like the multiple and also like production, and then how production deals with color and separation of color space and physical space to make a sort of like new version of the reality of what it's supposed to represent. And like in that, also interested in the degradation that happens inevitably, even though it's supposed to always be the same thing. And
oh, that's
so,
that's so interesting, printmaking. Sorry to interrupt you, but now I realize that's where the moray pattern comes from.
Yes,
you're interested
exactly.
in that, just what you're saying, which is an example of, as you're saying, the image not made by the human hand. Something else is happening. There's an intermediary that's making the image.
Yeah, and moiré is so interesting because it can both be an illusion that is not a physical manifestation of something, but it can also be a physical manifestation of the illusion. And like that's always really fascinating to me that it's the same thing. And sort of, you know, it can be manufactured in multiple ways, but in some ways it's like it's actual or whatever, and in some ways it's not actual.
The moiré pattern itself, the concepts of the moiré pattern, you mean?
Yeah, or, you know, like you take a picture with your cell phone through a window screen, and when it's zoomed out, it looks like it has a moiré, and then you zoom into the image and you see that it was just like the pixels trying to deal with the grid of the window screen, and it doesn't actually have a moiré. It was just like a screen effect versus like you make a wrong angle on a CMYK print, and then you have a printed moiré that's there permanently.
Yeah. That makes sense. I love talking about that. There's one more series I want to talk about before we go, which is Modern Prometheus, also recent, right? Or within the year. But that's also talking about a number of issues that we're discussing, right?
Absolutely. And those ones were they were really big and they're door sized. So I wanted them to sort of be larger than me, which means I sort of like have a different presence than any of the other works that I've done. But I was thinking a lot in that series, I'm using the same set of photographs and manipulating them and layering them differently on top of each other. So they all have a sort of like familiarity within their sort of relationship to each other, but it isn't really like noticeable until like sometimes people are like, oh, is this image in this one too, you know? And that was when I started doing the needle lace with the reflective thread. That was about a year ago when I started that series in January 2023, when I started to teach myself needle lace. I'm interested in this idea of like what I call like the whole solution, like what to do about a hole. And so I'm, you know, still trying to hone. I mean, I'm not very good at it for like real lace makers, but I've been working on a new kind of needle lace recently in the studio for my next project. But and that series was very sort of deep colors, and that's something I'm sort of thinking of for the next series that I'm working on as well.
That's exciting. It's great talking to you about this, and I feel like there's so many subjects within this that we could keep talking about. I really appreciate your time today. I want to ask you one more question before we go, and that's, what are you reading at the moment?
I'm actually reading Alice in Wonderland again for the millionth time at the moment.
That sounds great. And why?
It was one of the books I learned how to read with, and I've always been really interested specifically in like the original illustrations, but also in this sort of like parallel universe or parallel many universes and the sort of animacy of objects and of animals and of things that are not necessarily human. And the sort of colors that reading it gives me in my brain. I'm trying to think of new naming conventions, new titling for the next series. And last year I was all about Frankenstein, hence Modern Prometheus. But I think this year it's Alice in Wonderland.
That sounds wonderful and really cool. Irma, I want to thank you so much for talking to me today. It's been a pleasure. I wish you well with your show. There's links here so listeners can hopefully attend the show before it closes in February. Thanks again so much, Irma, for talking with me today.
Thank you so much. It's been such a pleasure.
You're listening to Yale Radio WYBC. This is Brainerd Carey with the lives of the artists, architects, curators, and more.